Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a Noles fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Unconquered Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jason Staples. And also, as always, this show is brought to you by Louis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Still very happy to have Louis as a sponsor on this show. Nobody does it better in the greater Jacksonville area. If you have any real estate needs in the state of Florida, contact Louis. Make sure that he can get you referred to the right person if it's outside his area. And if it is in his area, then you are in luck because you're not going to do any better than with Louis, especially if you're selling your home. Nobody's going to make it look any better than what Louis will because of his professional training as a photographer and videographer and ability to give you drone footage of the property and everything else. Definitely the way to go if you're going to be selling any property. Also brought to you by Garage Makeovers, the top-rated garage remodeling company in South Florida. They've been serving all of Palm Beach and Broward County since 2005. If you need anything done in your garage, give them a call and let them know you heard about them from the Unconquered Podcast, and they'll give you some special savings. I'm not exactly sure what that's going to be, but they'll take care of you as a Seminole fan. All right, I just wanted to do a quick question and answer show today. I got a few questions that I felt like they needed to be addressed sooner than later, and just couldn't fit them into the already slightly longer than I'd liked preview episode for the NC State game. So I'm just going to do a standalone episode here for the question and answer quickly before any of that happens. Also a reminder to those of you who are Patreon subscribers, the film review did post on Thursday evening at 5 o'clock. And so those of you who still want to take a look at anything from the Clemson game, well, feel free to do so. The end of it does take a look at Blackman's couple highlights and looks at what he may bring to the table if he's going to be the guy going forward. So if you want to just look at a couple positives, you can skip to the end. But yeah. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get to some of these questions. I had a number of them. Some of them were longer questions that contained a number of questions within them. So I'm just going to break these up. I'm not going to talk about who did what or who asked them or whatever. I'm just going to address question at a time. But the first one is, do I see a scenario that due to deficiencies throughout so many position groups on the football team that Taggart would allow Walt Bell to get more involved in play calling so that Taggart can focus more on the overall program? Or does ego come into play where it's his offense and he won't compromise even if it's temporary? Let's face it, it's not like the offense can get worse. I think there were 12 punts yesterday. So, yeah, address that one first. No, I don't think that we're going to see Walt Bell get any more involved in play calling. This is Taggart's offense. It's going to be Taggart's offense. He's going to run the offense. And Walt Bell is going to help coordinate that offense. Now, remember, coordination and play calling are different. Walt Bell is going to do the best he can to coordinate that offense and to make sure that Taggart has what he needs to be able to call those plays according to his plan. But this is going to be Taggart's offense, and he is not going to even temporarily have someone like Walt take over the play calling. Now, and it's going to be interesting also just to see how long Walt Bell is at Florida State. I mean, that's one of the things in terms of that kind of play calling relationship or, you know, who's running the offense, that there is some benefit to a head coach often running the offense because you don't know how long a guy's going to be. You don't know if a coordinator is going to be there for very long. And it'll be interesting to see how long Walt Bell is at Florida State. But so next question, Alonzo Hampton and special teams are costing you potential wins. That group fundamentally is just as bad now as they were in week 1. Do you see a repeat scenario where Willie is loyal to his coaches or friends to where he will be reluctant to make changes? Jimbo did this as well. Saban seems to upgrade staff every year, probably a bad comparison. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good question. Yeah, and those of you on this show who listened to this show for a long time know that I'm pretty hesitant to criticize specific coaches in terms of performance and all that, because it can get complicated. I mean, listen, I coach. I'm responsible for the special teams on the high school that I coach for, and we've had a couple scenarios this year where things just didn't go right. We got a punt blocked at one point. We had four backups on that unit due to some injuries and some other issues that game, and it was in the pouring rain. Had a snap go awry, and everything just went wrong. That's on me. But at the same point, do I think I should be fired for that? No. We also had a kickoff return for a touchdown and a fake punt that went for 40 yards last night. So, you know, I feel like there's good and bad there, right? That said, you ain't wrong about how special teams have looked so far this year. Now, there has been some improvement since week one. Weeks one, two, and three, it was a dodgy scenario as to whether Florida State was going to be able to get off a punt in terms of protection and everything else. And they seem to have simplified a little bit on that and are at least able to protect the punter, which is good. But other units have been very underwhelming. And for a situation where you are focusing on that, you have a guy who's devoted and dedicated to that. The returns have been less than stellar. So I do think that that's something that Taggart needs to look at in the offseason. I don't know how willing he's going to be to do that, because to be honest, a lot of fans complained about Jimbo as being too loyal or whatever else. Jimbo got rid of some guys. Now, he did it usually without firing people, but he was not hesitant to get rid of guys. And beyond that, there were also some issues in terms of the administration saying, well, we don't have the money to replace that guy. You've got him on an extended year contract. Make do. Figure out how to get him to work. So there is that. That's where it gets a little bit more complex. I mean, Saban has the advantage of, if he says at Alabama, we need to fire this guy, pay out the next 2 years of his contract because he's just not working out, and then we need to go and pay another, you know, $2 million out of our budget to go hire this guy in a 3-year contract. Bama's going to go, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. We'll do it. Where do you want who do you want the check made out to? Florida State is not in that situation. Florida State's not in a situation where you've got a coach on a multi-year contract where you say, all right, well, I guess we'll just have to pay him, buy out his contract for the next couple of years and, sign over another, a new coach after 1 year. That's not something that Florida State really has a whole lot of money to do. And especially if you know anything about the condition of the books when the outgoing athletic director left, if you're not aware of that, it's a disaster. There's been some significant mismanagement at the athletic at the higher levels of the athletic department, in terms of how things were done, in terms of who was hired for what, in terms of how much people actually knew about the budgets, in terms of how the budgets were kept. I know that when the interim AD took over and actually took a look at the books, he flipped. He freaked out. And that's why all of a sudden budgets got slashed for different sports in August, in September. Why? Because early September, when he looked at the books, he went, wait, we don't have the money for this. We can't do this. And I'm talking about simple recurring expenses that just were not. Those of you who run businesses out there, you know that you've got ways of handling this. You should have your recurring budgets. You have your acquisition budgets. You have your growth targets. You've got all sorts of things. Florida State was a mess. So that's something that Taggart's going to have to deal with moving forward in terms of addressing some of those issues. And that gets beyond capital campaigns, things like the most recent $20 million gift from Chainsaw Al. You know, those sorts of things help, but that's not really directed toward the recurring budget issues and some of these other things that where Florida State is not in good shape. So that complicates things. It also is complicated by the fact that in coaching is a is a, you know, you hear this all the time. Coaching is a fraternity. Coaching, there's, you know, there's a lot of family stuff. When you fire a coach, you are not just firing, you're not just saying, okay, well, you know, go and find another job in, you know, in across town or whatever. You're uprooting a family. You are oftentimes burning some serious bridges. You're dealing with a whole set of network issues. And, you know, that stuff is, it's a different business than a standard business in so many respects. So that makes it more difficult. And yes, coaches do tend to be more loyal on that. And for good reason. If you're not, if you get a reputation as a guy who isn't loyal, then coaches don't want to come coach for you. If you're a guy who terminates a guy after 1 year, then other coaches are going to go, do I want to coach for that guy? I don't know about that atmosphere. I don't know about what kind of situation I might be walking into. So that makes it more complicated. Now, to me, you know, it may be a situation where, you know, you decide, all right, well, we're going to have to reassign. We're going to have to, if you want to do this a way that might be best in terms of maintaining relationships, in terms of other things, you say, well, you know, we're going to have to reassign roles. And maybe, you know, if at the end of the year, and again, I'm not the one that's going to have to take a look at the coach's film, take a look at what's been done in practice and evaluate all this. But if you evaluate at the end of the year that a coach has not done his job to your liking, then, you know, maybe you say, well, you know, we're going to move you to an analyst position and we're going to bring someone else in. And, you know, for the present, you're going to continue making decent money. You're going to make, you know, the money that you need to make, but we're going to hire somebody else to do that job because, you know, your performance was just not good enough. Or maybe you assign somebody else to help. I mean, there's a number of ways to do this, but I'm skeptical as to whether or not we're going to see a guy like Hampton replaced at the end of the year. But to be honest, the performance level has of those units, and that's the one thing he's really responsible for. The performance has not been very good. So, you know, even as reticent as I am to say, you know, that sort of thing needs to be done, it needs to be at least evaluated at the end of the year. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I don't like saying that. I think Hampton has not been happy with the performance of his units, and he knows that, you know, it's not been very good. So, you know, none of this is a shocker. But yeah, I mean, it needs to be addressed. That said, I mean, I do think that after year one, I expect to see probably two faces, maybe three faces change between year one and year two on this staff. But we'll talk about that at a later date, and I'm certainly not going to get into the details on that. But I will not be surprised if there are two or three changes on this staff for various reasons. I'm not talking about guys getting fired or anything else necessarily. I'm just saying in terms of, you know, how things may end up working themselves out and develop. So it's going to be interesting. It's one of those things when you hire a new staff for a new program, it's always interesting to see how well that staff gels and, you know, who's going to fit and what you have planned for the future. And when you work together as a staff, you learn those things pretty quickly. So, like I said, I'll be a little surprised if this entire staff is back intact next year. I'll be a little surprised, but it's enough for now. We'll address that later in the year, and really in the off season, we'll address that. And I think that stuff will be more apparent later in the year. All right. Next comment. I think if a receiver is dropping passes, sit the guy and plug in a backup, show him they're replaceable. I would love to see more Treshawn Harrison. Yeah, that's good in theory. There are a couple things that are issues there, though. One is the wide receiver position is one of the hardest positions to coach for a few reasons. And one of them is, in general, you want to say, okay, if you're dropping passes, you know, I'm going to pull you out. You need to understand how replaceable you are and that you can't afford to drop passes. That's one approach for sure, but it's not always the best way to handle wide receivers, because catching the football, it's not, it's very, very rare that a guy drops passes because he doesn't care, or because, you know, he doesn't think he's replaceable or whatever. These guys want to catch every pass. The problem is that at the wide receiver position, as often as not, catching the football boils down to confidence. If you start losing confidence at all, if you start to question yourself at all, that ball gets to you so quickly, and you have to catch from so many different body positions with guys, you know, pulling on you and clawing at you and, you know, all sorts of different things. It is really difficult to catch a football at this level. I mean, I was talking to somebody, I coach together with Ron Rice up here, the former Detroit Lion. I coached together with Ron Rice, and he and I were laughing about this, about, you know, he says he wishes that he could do a startup business that would be something like, you know, couch receiver or something like that, or, you know, couch quarterback, where, you know, a fan could decide to pay to get the experience of what it would be like to have to catch like this. So now, you know, you're pulled directly off your couch, and all of a sudden you're thrown in there to have to try to catch a ball thrown at you at 60 miles an hour while somebody else is tugging at you, and while you have to turn around really quickly, and it's already, you know, in your field of, it's all, you barely get it in your field of vision before you have to get your hands up and catch it. And he's like, you know, these people think it's really easy to catch that ball, but it is a whole different ball game once you're in there. And it's the truth. Now, that said, yeah, once a guy starts dropping a bunch of balls, you can't leave him out there. And that's the hard balance to strike as a receivers coach, because you want to say, okay, listen, you're in a slump. You're not catching it well. We got to get somebody else in there to make sure that we're getting what we need to out of the position. But at the same point, you know, you got a guy that drops a ball and all of a sudden you see his head hang, and then he, you know, the last thing you want to do is completely shatter his confidence and pull him right at that moment and say, you know, and start chewing him out. And then the next time he goes out, he's trying not to drop it. Well, the surest way to drop a ball is to try not to drop it. It's just like in golf, you know, you do not want to go up there swinging a golf club thinking about what you don't, where you don't want to hit it. Oh, don't, you know, make sure you don't do this. Make sure you don't do that. Oh my goodness. You know full well that that's what's going to happen. Oh, don't hook it. Don't hook it. Don't. And you're going to go left of left. You have to go up and you have to commit to it, and you have to be confident to catch a football reliably. And I had a kid last night. I've got a kid who I'm coaching right now. He's 6'3", about 195, 200 pounds. He's a definite prospect for the future. He's a junior. He's got as good a hands as I've maybe ever seen. I mean, you're talking, I played with Anquan Boldin. I got to see Anquan Boldin up close. Great hands. This kid has hands pretty close to that, in terms of how he just naturally catches. It's like suction cups, size XXL hands. I mean, just suction cups. And he had one last night, went up to Mossa Kid and got his hands on it. And I think he'd gone something like 6, 7, 8 games without a drop this year. And he dropped that one. And I saw him get up and look at his hands, and it was a wet game, you know, whatever, but he got it in his hands and then just didn't come down with it. And I could see him just look down like, oh my gosh, what happened? And we threw another one to him a little bit later, a little shallow cross. And he bobbled it, juggled it in a way that I haven't seen all year. Normally, you know, there's no hesitation. He just, you know, it's suction cups. And he bobbled it, juggled it, and then, you know, got tackled, wasn't able to get yards after the catch as a result. When he came to the sideline, I looked at him and I said, you know, hey, did you bobble that because you were questioning yourself? You weren't sure about your hands? And he looked at me and he nodded. He said, yeah. I said, man, I trust your hands. You're going to just be confident. Make sure you catch it. That's the psychology that's involved in the receiver position and coaching a receiver position, to where if you start questioning it, you can go from having phenomenal hands to suddenly struggling to catch the ball, fighting it. So if you start saying, if a guy drops it and you start yanking him out of there every time, and you start, you know, start doing that, that can change things. So that's the balance. You don't want to create that fear, or you don't want to affect a guy's confidence and ability to actually catch it in order to try to, you know, strong arm this idea of, you know, you need to, you know, I need to show you how replaceable you are. That's usually not the problem with a wide receiver. And, you know, you get a guy like Keith Gavin, for example, who he's been really, again, and I've said this since the spring, talking to the folks at Florida State, Gavin has been the most consistent and best wide receiver on the roster since they arrived, since the new staff arrived. Now, that's the thing that's been real frustrating is that Gavin also has been the guy who has been really frustrating to watch because he'll keep doing one thing that's really great. Like he'll make a play where it's like, oh my gosh, that looks like Dez Bryant. And then he'll drop a key one. And then he'll go into a shell. And you look at what happens after he drops it, and he's not the same player. His confidence, he's a guy that you've got to really work. It's pretty obvious watching from the outside that he's a guy you have to focus on really building his confidence. He has to believe in himself and know that others believe in him, and he can be the player that you want. But the confidence is fragile. And so you're with him, you're trying to build the confidence because the reward of that is you've got a ridiculous athlete. And you've got a guy that by and large is the best and most consistent receiver you've had across multiple domains. Now, is he the most talented receiver on the roster? No. Both Tamorian Terry and Treshawn Harrison are more talented than he is. And I think Young is also more talented than he is. You know, Terry is the bigger deep threat. You know, there are certain guys that do certain things better, but he's been the most consistent guy and he's been the best blocker. He's been, you know, he does a lot of the little things and it's about getting him to believe enough that those drops get fewer and fewer. And that's a hard balance to strike because if he drops enough, then you need to replace him. That said, I completely agree that you need to see more, that they need to see more Harrison. This weekend against NC State, get him in there more. Keep rotating him in. And you know, again, he doesn't know all his assignments. Wide receiver is a position where it's really hard to contribute early. You know, normally you're going to see even the most talented wide receivers start contributing in year two. Take a look at T. Higgins, who I thought was the number one receiver coming out 2 years ago. Now, this year, he's finally blossoming and developing. He's probably the, you know, top three receiver in the conference. But it takes usually at least a year for a wide receiver, especially if they're not an early enrollee. It can take even more than that. It takes at least a year really to expect that guy to be what he can be. But he's starting to get there. And again, there's missed assignments here and there. He blocks the wrong guy. He blocks when he should be looking for an RPO. You know, all sorts of different things. You know, he doesn't line up on the line of scrimmage when he should be on the line. He's off, or he's not off when he should be off. There's any number of these things that you've just got to be able to do as a young guy, that he's starting to get there, but he's still making mistakes. But again, the more you get the ball into his hands, I think the happier everybody's going to be. And that's certainly true. Next year, he needs to be a feature guy. Next year, he needs to be on the field as much as possible. Because you put him, DJ Matthews, and Tamorian Terry out on the field, and now you've got three guys that can go yard at any moment. So, you know, that changes things pretty quickly. Now, you've still got to get a guy that can get it to him, but you know, he needs to get more time down the line for sure. But again, it's tricky when you're dealing with the wide receiver position because so much of it is psychological and so much depends on, you have to play with amnesia. You have to play free and clear. You have to play with great confidence to be good. And you can't shatter that as a coach or you're not going to be a very good wide receiver coach. You can't coach that position the way that you do a lot of others. It's very similar to the quarterback position in terms of how you have to coach it. And that's actually something I think Jimbo at times did not do very well at the receiver position is, you know, he climbed all over his quarterbacks and put pressure on them constantly. There were times where I think a few receivers I think they lost some confidence under the last staff at different points because of that pressure. And Dossie tried to be good cop to that bad cop a lot of times to try to rebuild that confidence. And that was kind of the relationship that they had. That's what you have to do. And I think that was, early on, especially, that was kind of how they worked that out. Now, later on, I don't know that it worked as well as it did early in the process, but you have to strike that balance. All right, final few questions here. Let's see. What would you do? So this is more of a meta question, a large scale question. What would you do right now to shake things up? FSU quit At halftime. And some coaches, Tommy Bowden, for example, never get over that. There are 4 weeks left with the opportunity to go bowling left in play. So how would you proceed? Thanks. Yeah, another really tough question. Again, the hard part is that I'm not there in practice to watch practice. So I don't see what the best options would be entirely. I know a few things that I would want to do if I were in this situation. One of which is I don't think you have a choice but to play some James Blackman right now. I think the body language from not just from 12, but from his teammates has been such that sometimes you just simply have to make a change at that position just to try to inject something different, something new there. I'm not sure it's going to be a whole lot better in terms of results. It'll be different results. The question is whether the results will be better. Certainly Blackman will be more willing to keep the ball in the running game, but does that mean he gets hurt? I mean, do you want that guy running a bunch? Certainly he's going to be more mobile and able to step up and away from pressure at different points, but that's probably going to lead to some turnovers here and there, you know, in terms of ball security and also, you know, taking some chances downfield. So, you know, you're probably going to have some different issues there, but honestly, that's one thing I would do is that right now things are pretty stale offensively and you have to try to find a way to inject some life there. And I think one way to do that is to make a change at the quarterback position. I think this is not an inside thing or anything. I'm not going off of anything a source has told me or anything. I think they were going to try to make it through this year with DeAndre Francois and then move on next year. One of those situations where why get Blackman, who's probably, you know, he and Sam Howell are going to go at it for the starting role next year, most likely. Why get him hurt? Why get him, potentially break his confidence in this season behind this offensive line and all that when, you know, 12 is already kind of a lost cause? Why not just, you know, finish this year out with 12 and then restart, hit the reboot button after the season? That's my suspicion as to what sort of was in mind, at least within the last few weeks. And that's why you leave 12 in there the whole way against Clemson until 12 quits and decides, you know what, I'm going to force you to play Blackman. He's going to have to come in because I'm just not interested in taking any more shots. And it's hard to blame Francois for that, by the way. Because, well, would you want to be in there when you're down 50? Would you want to be in there when you're still taking a beating? It's no fun, and you're not going to win it. So, you know, it's hard to blame. Hard to blame him for that. But the other thing is that, you know, I think you have to within the confines of the offense, you have to find a few intermediate pass concepts and quick game concepts that you feel like you can throw reliably that force teams not to load the box, that are going to put some constraints on teams coming downhill with their linebackers against the run. And again, with each quarterback, I'm not sure what those things are going to be, but I think you have to focus on whether that's dipping into some stuff that they did in the past in terms of some pass concepts for possession passing. This is not an offense that's built to do possession passing by and large, but I think you have to kind of go that direction with what they've got to try to protect your offensive line and to, you know, have some semblance of balance. Beyond that, I think you have to, on the offensive side, you've got to start taking a almost Jeff Bowden approach at times in terms of when you have opportunities, if you can create one-on-ones, run the Greg Carr offense with Tamori and Terry. You know, set a quota of we've got to make sure we take at least, you know, five deep shots to that guy per game. Why? Well, you know, you might only hit two of them, but that might be 14 points. And considering you can't drive the ball down the field running it the way you want, maybe that's your best chance is to try to scheme up some deep shots. You know, four or five minimum to Terry. You know, you're going to scheme up a deep shot or two to somebody else, whether that's Harrison or Gavin or somebody. And you got to find ways to do that. I'd also throw a lot more back shoulder fades in this offense than what they've been doing. Get it out quick and try to use those receiver size in one-on-one situations. I think you need to emphasize that, throw in some verticals down the outside. And that's probably going to mean you're changing your splits a little bit to give your guys a little bit of a chance there. But those would be some changes I'd make on offense. I'd also, I would not make a, I would not at this point go, complete youth movement, partly because, again, you don't want to shatter these young guys' ability to play by getting their butts kicked in these last four games of the regular season. You don't want them to go out there and learn to lose, learn to get their butts kicked early on. You want to continue to integrate them in situations where they can actually succeed in things that they know to do. But you want to keep integrating young guys as they go. Now, defensively, I would start going a little bit more with some young guys. See if you can play Warner some more, even more at linebacker. See if you can get those freshman corners even more time. See what you can do in terms of maybe getting a little bit of a little bit more youth out there on the defensive side. But otherwise, defensively, they've played pretty well. But I think maybe you do start to move on in the secondary in terms of getting talent out there. Although, one of the problems is that at the safety position, other than Samuels, and Samuels hasn't been great this year, but other than Samuels, the talent to play the scheme that they want back there is a question. So, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot to do that you can do to really change things around. It's not like you have, for sure, the quarterback of the future on your roster that you can turn to. It's not like you have, a bunch of young guys that are more talented at key positions that you can turn to. But what you can do is you can start to transition to some of the places, in some of these positions where maybe there's a little bit more talented guy that is younger on defense in particular, or, a guy like Harrison, work some of those guys in, make a change at quarterback and see what happens. I think those are some of the things that I would probably want to do if I were coaching. But this is really hard because when you're in this situation as a coaching staff, you look around and there's just no easy answers. Things are not where you want them to be, and what else can you do? So I'm going to go ahead and wrap the show there. Thanks for the questions. If you have any other questions, you can feel free to get a hold of me via email or direct message or anything else in social media, and I'll probably do another question and answer here pretty soon. As always, I want to thank my sponsors, Louis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida, and Garage Makeovers, the top-rated garage remodeling company in South Florida. I also want to thank the supporters from Patreon who are above the Secure the Bag level. That would be Hector Cartagena, Dan Alvarez, Keith Cheney, Neil Cook, and Bert Bertoldi. Thank you all for your generosity. Definitely helps keep this going and helps make those film sessions possible. Many thanks to all of you. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.